the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben, this is Johnny. Johnny, how are you this week?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's peak hay fever season over here with all the flowers coming out, so I hope I'm not sounding too nasally, but I'm doing not too bad on this Monday night. How about you, Ben?
I'm good, thanks, Johnny. Pleased to hear that you didn't shout yourself hoarse at the Gumba versus Tosu game on Sunday. Just over 24 hours later, your voice seems to have stood up fairly well.
Yeah, my old mate Parky O'Gu, he was testing my nerves a bit, but yeah, we got through it in the end. But more on that later. But so I'm in pretty good spirits, and then yeah, I'm looking forward to. We've got a really interesting pod today with a couple of really interesting guests. So I hope we can keep the peace between the two tonight.
We shall wait and see. So yes, it was a bumper weekend of J1 action for us to review, with the leaders at the start of the match day hosting the defending champions at the National Stadium, and our new leaders going clear on top for the first time in over 4 years. But we're beginning with Tokyo Verde hosting FC Tokyo, the clash of teams who began the match day in 16th and 6th respectively, as the Tokyo Derby returned to the top flight for the first time in 16 years. And what an occasion it was at Ajinomoto Stadium, with the spoils shared after a dramatic, to say the least, 2-2 draw. And as Johnny hinted at, we're joined by two guests who agreed to come on win, lose or draw, and who have both stuck to their word. In the green corner, it's Lewis White. Lewis, I'd ask how you are, but I imagine you're still gutted after conceding a 94th minute equaliser. Or have you come to terms with things as we record over 48 hours after the game ended?
I'd kind of made my peace with it until I watched the highlights, and now I'm raging again. I'd kind of avoided the highlights deliberately all through yesterday, and now, because I'm back on here, I had to go and check who to blame. So I've got a couple of names. So yeah, I'm hanging in there. But yeah, that was an absolute. I would probably say honestly that I've been to hundreds and hundreds of football matches. I've been to over 100 Verde games now, and I'm a Kilmarnock fan, so I've got my fair share of misery and pain. But that's top five. That's top five. That was horrible. So, congrats, lads.
Well, yeah, as I say, we really appreciate you through and joining us to try and relive the game, Lewis. And in the red and blue corner, it's Tom Pennington. Tom, still cock a hoop after our new Lord and Saviour Keita Endo's heroics?
Oh my God, I cannot believe we turned that around. To be honest with you, I was. By halftime, I was ready to get out of there. You know, it was that bad at the half. I have no idea how we got that out of there, but all I can say is it's sweet relief.
Yeah, and guys, I've obviously a lot running through my head in while the game was going on, and then knowing that you were both going to be coming on after it finished, I kind of wasn't really sure how to attack it. I think, Lewis, we've got to start at the end, and maybe this will be somewhat therapeutic for you talking through it. I mean, yeah, the fact that you played the entire second half against 10 men and most of it with a 2-0 lead, to see it go in such heartbreaking fashion, as I say, in the 94th minute, after all of the games that you've played this season have all had late drama in them. I mean, this has got to be the topper, and surely it can't get any worse for you from here on in.
I mean, I thought, because I think you had a corner straight after it, and I was like, I bet they score from this.
yeah, we did.
I think that the biggest risk, so we lost Taniguchi in the first half, and I think, I don't think the centre-backs have been, I think they've been a little bit messy this season, but last season that was our strongest position, and I think that this year they've looked a lot shakier, understandably so, because they're playing J1. But I think it's the kind of unforced errors, and Taniguchi going off is the best of the bunch of the centre backs, so that was a loss. But I think if you look at the equaliser, again, Endo, for as much as it was a really good finish, Endo had so much time to pick his spot. Kind of ball lands, I don't think Tsunashima's quick enough to get out to Nakagawa, who I thought had a pretty decent second half in the end. But yeah, Hayashi not closing down Endo. It's just because exactly the same thing happened against Sanga with that, like that Toyokawa like super goal, and for as much as that was also an absolutely world class finish, he could have let that bounce a three more times before he volleyed it, and it's like Hayashi's being told because I've seen Mateus tell him and under no uncertain terms to get out. And it's the same thing happening again. And it's just, and that's the most galling thing about the whole thing, because it's a young team. I think it might be the youngest in the league on average. And obviously there's a period of like where they need to adapt to the kind of harsher realities of J1. But some of the mistakes are so daft, and some of the goals we're conceding are so avoidable. So yeah, that's for me. That's the most galling part of it. It didn't need to be this way, and we've had plenty of warnings, and then to do it in that kind of game as well against 10 men, it's like, come on lads, that's plenty. So yeah, that did it for me. That's why I went home in a big mad huff.
Yeah. So I mean, the game finished in glorious fashion for FC Tokyo, Tom, but there were obviously huge issues around the first half performance, especially. And yes, although Pete Klimovsky looks like a genius bringing on Keita Endo in the 61st minute, and he goes on to score the two goals to finish the game off. I mean, for me, Salma Anzai's had an absolute nightmare. He's obviously given away the penalty and then gotten sent off 2 minutes before the break. So Klimovsky wants to bring these youngsters through. But, I mean, Anzai just clearly wasn't up to it on this occasion. And, well, as I say, we've pulled a point out of the fire when we really had no right to. But I think Tokyo heads definitely went, didn't they, after the penalty? And yeah, Verdi were rampant there for a while.
Well, see, that's the thing, right? Is I thought we started quite brightly. You know, we were getting our chances on target, a little bit wasteful at times, but that's just been us in a nutshell so far this season. Like, I went into this game thinking, which Tokyo are we going to get? Are we going to get the Jekyll or are we going to get Mr. Hyde? You know, it's been a nightmare trying to support this club, because you get games where we come off against Frontale and we don't get a single shot on target for 90 minutes. And then you have games like we played against Kashima, where we're pinging the ball around quite nicely, setting up some great goals. I didn't know what to expect going into this. So, you know, I was saying to Lewis before the game, I was like, you know, if we get a point out of this, it might be decent, but I wouldn't be surprised if the result went your way. And yeah, that penalty, I have no idea. I was watching Anzai take that in and just, he doesn't go for the ball at all. He just clearly takes the man out. I don't know what he was thinking with that. And the second yellow as well, I think it was a deserved sending off. So I was beside myself at halftime thinking, how are we going to get out of this one? It could only go further downhill from here. I really had shades of Todoroki, you know, a few weeks earlier, of going like, oh God, it's going to get that bad, isn't it? Right. You know, we're down to 10 men. And you have to, credit Verdi, because that second goal, was it Somone? I think it was. That was an absolute peach of a goal. I'm not going to lie. That was
so
minutes. Yeah, that was a gorgeous goal. But yeah, you know, we somehow managed to hang around. And when Endo got the first one, I thought, okay, 2-1, maybe we could do it. And then I just kept thinking, well, Verdi are keen to give up these equalizers in the 89th minute. Maybe we'll snag one there. And, you know, we it looked like we were going to do it for a bit, and then they go back down the other way in the 89th minute. I'm going, oh God, here it is, 3-1, here it is. Hatano pulls up a great save, thinking, okay, we're still in this, we still have a chance, right? And sure enough, like, I was just going absolutely mental when we got that equalizer. This just, I didn't think we deserved it on the whole run of play in the second half, perhaps, but I was just shocked that we actually got the result. But it really shows you know, how much we rely on Matsuki and how much Araki's been an incredible signing as well for us. Those two are going to be missed when it comes up to Machida next week.
Yeah, so it was really interesting, Tom. You're kind of describing your experience in the stadium, and I know that's something we often get kind of questions about from patrons or on Twitter about like from people outside Japan, that what the experience is like in the stadium. So, Lewis, if I could just ask you, obviously, what was your experience from the Verdy side, particularly if we focus on the positive part, like at halftime and at the first half, because it did really feel like Tom said, I think FC Tokyo maybe slightly shaded the first half of the first half, but then after the goal, it seemed like Verdy were rampant and everything was in their favour. And I know we're both Scots, so we might have be ingrained to see the worst of the situation when it comes to football. So how are you and the Verdy fans feeling at half time?
Going into half time, I was pretty happy. I was like, yeah, we're totally in control of this. And I think like even before Anzai's red card, I thought we were kind of beginning to. It was no longer this kind of David and Goliath type of thing at all. And I felt like we were competing on a pretty equal footing. And then when the red card went, we got the second, and I thought, okay, cool, this is actually going surprisingly well. Then the man sent off, and I thought, okay, this is ridiculous. And then going into the start of the second half, it did feel quite like one-way traffic, and I honestly did, more fool me, kind of began to enjoy it. And then I was there with another Scottish friend of mine, and then I turned to him, and I was like, any money, if we ship one, we're not winning this. Mm. Because there's been a couple of moments when we looked a bit loose, and then it was like written in the stars. I think it was Yamakoshi sent a ball out to the left, the fullback, and that was the one that was intercepted. And it was just the kind of lack of shape and the lack of organisation getting back, and the kind of ease with which that first goal was scored, the first Tokyo goal was scored. And I thought, we look rattled. And from that point, we had a couple of breaks, but it felt very, very much like we were kind of on the back foot. But half time, beginning of the second half, I was like, yes, on that. and then, there we go. That's hubris for you. I was beginning to enjoy it at that point. But I think that's we maybe come to this later on, just as a general review of the season so far. But I think that would be a kind of microcosm of the season. Not really looking horrendously out of our depth in many games, but also just having these, if you want, for want of a better term, J2 moments. And I think that's what's cost us. There's a kind of youthfulness and there's a naivety about the side at the moment. We play well and it's fun, and then until it isn't, and that's basically it in a nutshell so far this season.
I think that's really interesting, because I was going to make a very similar point. I watched the game today on Monday, like a couple of days after, and I actually then we're going to talk about later Vissel Kobe Machida. I watched that on Saturday night, and both games, you can sort of skip on a bit on DAZN 10 seconds if there's like a free kick or a corner. And what was very stark was how much more time Vissel Kobe wasted at every corner, free kick, goal kick substitution than Verdy. The amount of times you could go like 90 seconds, 2 minutes, and Vissel still hadn't taken the free kick. They killed like 25, 30 minutes of the game. Whereas Verdy, it was brilliant for a neutral to watch, but it was very, very frantic. And I think, you mentioned the naivety. I think there's it's been mentioned many times, I think, on here in JTET, there's not much difference in quality between a good J2 and a sort of bottom half J1 player. But maybe it's just that extra kind of game management and, part of my French, shithousery. Vissel Kobe are very good because they've got good players, but they also use every advantage they can. And I think, Verdy, to be two goals up and a player up and then to get caught out in a counter-attack like they were, which is a very similar goal, actually, to the one Verdy scored, but it's just less spectacular. I think that was disappointing. And then, that kind of set up the, that kind of set the chain of events towards the end of the game. So, they're a very naive team, but they've got a very experienced manager. So I would hope for your guys' sake that this is a very extremely painful learning experience, but something that is learned from going forward.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the difference. And I think someone like Joel Hooker is clearly going to be absolutely apoplectic about that. And I know Mateus was as well. I think he had something in his post-match interview to the extent that everyone needs to stop being so nice about this team. Something along those lines anyway. We need a good booing or something along those lines. But yeah, exactly. It's that kind of... I think maybe some of it maybe comes from this kind of like Verdi as a... Like it's this club that's been churning out this kind of youth talent, and it's got this really kind of Corinthian spirit, like a youth team policy. And I think we've got used to being quite nice. Like we've got kind of used to this kind of permanent J2 situation where we bring out through all these fantastic players and they all bugger off like pronto to bigger and better things. And it's like, lads, like this is the time to be the bigger and better thing. And then that, and like as you say, that also kind of involves also being a bit of a dick sometimes, for what sort of excuse language. But yeah, just a little bit of that kind of that gamesmanship, that not maybe not gamesmanship's a bit harsh, but just like that kind of professionalism, for want of a less euphemistic term. I think that needs to come in if we're going to start getting wins instead of these. I think we're on six draws or something like that. Five draws. And I think that would be the kind of missing link to get us up the table a little bit.
Indeed. So, Tom, what about from the FC Tokyo perspective then, having this fixture back on the slate, and how the FC Tokyo support relished it? Obviously, as a club, we're used to having, you know, big occasions at Ajinomoto Stadium with, you know, big crowds of over 30,000 plus. And, you know, I think overall we might have been slightly disappointed at the crowd of 31,700 for this game on Saturday, considering the perfect conditions and, the fact that this was the first derby in J1 in 16 years. But yeah, how did you feel the Tokyo support relished the occasion, and obviously celebrating well at the end? But the way that the whole day transpired.
Well, first I'd say that the reason it was 31,000 is because there are only so many FC Tokyo fans that could fit in the stadium as the away team, right? So you know, we were obviously more than capable of filling that stadium up a little bit more, but they don't want to sit in the green side, and I don't blame them, right?
No comment.
But obviously this is the game that we look forward to. I remember when the game actually, like going back to last season, the playoff final, when Verdi clinched promotion right off of that dramatic penalty and whatnot. All of us on my Tokyo group, we were just thrilled, to be honest with you, because we finally have a proper derby to go to for like 16 years now or something like that. You know, it's just insane to think that it's been that long and all we've had is Frontale. And I don't mean disrespect to Frontale or the club or anything like that. You know, we entered the J League at the same time in 99, but you know, that's not a derby for us. It's always been Verdi has been the one team that, you know, even a lot of original Tokyo Gas supporters, you know, when Verdi moved over to Kawasaki, they didn't want to follow them. They wanted to support a team in Tokyo, and they moved over to Tokyo Gas. So, you know, there's a little bit of, animosity towards Verdi in that sense as well, because those supporters felt betrayed that they weren't, you know, they weren't respected, I guess you could say. Going into the game before it, I was sharing with Lewis beforehand, there are a lot of supporters with some interesting shirts that were being designed specifically for the game. There were some other signboards that we were not hiding. I'm not sure. I don't think the broadcast picked them up, but there were definitely a lot of F Verdi signboards that were well positioned around the lot. Like we were waiting for this game, honestly. Like we were loving it. The match buildup was all great and all that. Talking to Lewis before the game, actually at the stadium, we got approached a number of times to speak with people who were curious. Like, you know, there's a Tokyo fan sitting with a Verdi fan. They're both foreigners, what's going on here, right? So we had a good time with that. And yeah, you know, halftime was quite somber. You know, we were obviously disappointed with how the team had performed, with Anzai being sent off, down 2-0. We're looking like it's going to be a horrible game. Full time, I don't want to say it felt like a win, but it certainly felt more like we took 2 points off of Verdi in that sense, because we stopped them from winning. It was more that like kind of satisfaction than it was of us getting the draw, I think. It's just that we prevented them from winning was more the general feeling. And I celebrated that goal wildly. But yeah, it was definitely more a feeling that we stole the points off of Verdi than Verdi getting all three.
Yep, fair enough then. All right, so we'll just run through the major incidents from the game for the listeners, guys. So, I think has been mentioned by a couple of us, Tokyo started somewhat the brighter, but Verdi took the lead in the 28th minute from the penalty spot, Tomoyo Miki scoring after he was fouled by Soma Anzai, a nailed-on penalty for everybody who saw it, except my 7-year-old son, who was watching alongside me and was having none of it, but even though I was trying to explain the Tokyo player clearly kicked the Verdi player. He was, he was all over the referee, my son, but not to worry. definitely got his red and blue glasses on already at 7 years old. As we said, Tokyo heads had completely gone by this point, and 5 minutes later, it was 2-0 to Verdi after a phenomenal volley from alongside the penalty spot by totally unmarked, it must be said, Itsuki Somino, an absolutely tremendous finish after a poor pass out of defence by Henrique Trevisan was cut out by Kazuya Miyahara. His cross was inch perfect for Somino to volley in. And then, as we've mentioned, Soma Anzai was shown a second yellow card 2 minutes before the break. His running battle with Miki ended with him being sent off after catching him on the ankle. And as Lewis has mentioned, about the only thing that didn't go for Verdi in the first half was losing centre-back Hiroto Taniguchi to injury just before Anzai was sent off. And it was Taniguchi's replacement, Kohei Yamakoshi, whose loose pass of his own gave Tokyo a lifeline in the 68th minute. Kosuke Shirai pounced on Yamakoshi's poor pass and ran half the length of the pitch down the right. Then from the edge of the box, Shirai squared. A substitute, Tsubasa Terayama, stepped over the ball, and his fellow substitute, Keita Endo, scored the first of his two goals on the afternoon, spanking a first-time shot low to Verdi keeper Mateus's right for 2-1. And as we mentioned, and Johnny warned FC Tokyo last week to beware Hiroto Yamami, he almost made it 3-1 for Verdi as they countered 3-on-2 in the 89th minute, only for Goal Hatano to make a fine low save. And then in the 94th minute, Hatano sent a long ball forward. Trevisan jumped with Yamakoshi, who won the header, but Nakagawa controlled the bouncing ball and squared to Endo, who from the outer edge of the D sent an outrageous left-footed strike just inside Mateus's right-hand post. And as Lewis has said, Endo could definitely have been closed down, but it wasn't. And sent the Tokyo away end into delirium, I think it's fair to say. So, Johnny, is there anything else you wanted to either ask the guys or mention yourself on this game as a neutral watching it? Did you enjoy it as an occasion? And did it live up to your expectations?
As a neutral, I thoroughly enjoyed it. As I mentioned with my chat there with Lewis, maybe I think Verdi might have benefited from it being a bit more of a boring second half. But yeah, I think that the first half was very unexpected. I thought, the first 20-25 minutes were kind of as I expected it to go. But then it's just one thing after the other went in Verdi's favour and against FC Tokyo. I think maybe what's not been mentioned in the second goal, the Somino, I think in the 90 seconds or 2 minutes leading up to that goal, FC Tokyo had multiple chances to get the ball out of their defensive third and didn't take any of them. They were either blocked or they put it straight into touch. And I think the ball just stayed in that defensive area for so long. And then finally they were punished by one of these passes going astray. And it was what a wonderful goal it was from Somino. Mm. And then, the second half, it didn't seem to be too much was going on in the first 20 minutes. But bringing on Endo, I think that really seemed to help change things. Because, if I'm honest, if you'd given me a list of J1 teams that you said, who do you think is most likely to come back from two goals down and a player down at half time, I would have said Yokohama F. Mariners would be most likely. So maybe signing players from them like Nakagawa and Endo is proven fruitful for FC Tokyo. Because honestly, I would have put FC Tokyo down there with Gamba and teams that you would think would wilt in the second half under those circumstances. So yeah, I think fair play to FC Tokyo for their comeback. And I remember you mentioning last year about the comeback against Sagan Tosu. Was it the first time since the Clinton administration? So, I mean, I wonder how much that reflects on Peter Klimovsky, because both of these comebacks have come under his tutelage. So, I mean, Tom, I wanted to ask you, like, what you and the kind of fellow FC Tokyo fans, what's your kind of assessment of the Klimovsky reign to date?
Well, it's like I was saying before, with regards to what team is going to show up. You know, Tokyo didn't start too well in many games. And when they don't start well in many games, that tends to just carry on through the 90 minutes. And we got that against Frontale. I thought in the earlier parts of the season, as well as our draw against Cerezo, you know, it was always a bit of a fight. I just haven't been that keen about some of the performances. You know, there is a lot of hype that comes out of Pete. You know, sometimes the club will release like his in dressing room things, and he's, you know, constantly gabs like, come on, let's go, except he's using obviously more colorful language. But yeah, it's very, very flip a coin for me still. I just don't have the confidence going into match days. You know, I went into the match against Urawa thinking that a draw would be ideal, and we somehow pulled out a win against Kashima. We played excellent football. I think the best game of our season so far, and, you know, came away with the result there. Going into this one, I said it's a derby, so who knows? You know, Verdi's going to be up for it for sure. We're missing our key players, mind you. Verdi are missing a couple of their U23 stars as well. So I mean, you know, it balances itself out, and it really showed that I think Tokyo lacks a little bit of depth when it comes down to it. And there wasn't much that we could offer. And that's why I'm really concerned about the match to match, because, you know, if we put in another first half performance like we did against Verdi here, I don't see us coming back again. I think it was extremely fortunate to get the result that we did today. Not today, excuse me, on Saturday, because it's just not how I hope that the team plays. And I just feel that we're missing a lot of that strength to really go when we're up on top of a team, we take our chances. But, you know, as we saw in this game, we started up brightly. We weren't taking our chances. We got punished. We then dug ourselves a bigger hole and made it worse for us and somehow pulled it out. Asked me how, I have no idea. But yeah, it's just hard to really gauge how this team is.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it definitely is Jekyll and Hyde on a week-to-week basis, Tom. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure if Pete was here, he would say he's well aware that it's still a work in progress. But yeah, I guess, eight games into the season, I guess it's really a little bit too early still to make any definitive judgments. But yes, a little bit of consistency along the way would definitely be appreciated. I mean, yeah, the second half, I mean, this will obviously live on in infamy. What's the opposite of infamy? This will live on in glory for Tokyo, this you know, this fight back against against Verdi with 10 men in the second half. And I mean, it was only three shots on target in the second half. It just happened that two of them were from Endo, and the third was Trevisan's header right at the death that if he could have got it a yard either side, it might have been the winner. But that's it then. The first derby in 16 years, it definitely delivered drama. And I guess both teams have to dust themselves down for big games coming up this weekend in match day 9. It's being dubbed by DAZN as new versus old Kawasaki Lewis at Todoroki.
I'm not gonna lie, as soon as I saw that, I could not help but smile. I said, somebody's surely taken this. And sure enough, you go on Twitter, you'll see old Kawasaki has been trending. See a bunch of motorbikes, and then all of a sudden Verdi is right there. I'm just like, mwah, beautiful.
I'm rising above it.
Yeah, I don't know if they've come up with a catchy title for FC Tokyo versus Machida yet. I'm not sure if they've banged their heads together and come up with something. But yeah, Lewis, I mean, to this point, we've obviously Johnny and I have really enjoyed talking about them on a week to week basis because your games have always they've always gone down to the death, and they're going to send you to an early grave. But I think by the way things have gone through the first eight games, as you said earlier, it's 5 draws through the first 8 games, that the one win against Shonan, and it must be said, I mean, the 2 losses are to Yokohama F Marinos, who were the champions 2 seasons ago, and Cerezo Osaka, who are our new leaders after match day 8. So I'm sure you've been very pleased with how competitive they've been in each game, but this penchant for late drama, it's it must be sending you grey.
In a nutshell, I'm knackered. it's been fun. It's been really, really fun. It's been completely mental so far, I think it's fair to say. But I could just do with a little bit of stability. And so naturally we come up against another basket case in this season's Frontari in the next game. That could literally go either way, I think. I think it's gonna really be important when we find out the extent of Taniguchi's injury. It looks like it was a hamstring, given the way he reacted. I don't know. Like, I think, yeah, if we can get a few wins, I think if we can get, I'm going to go for like 9 or 10 wins this season, I think we'll be all right. But yeah, we're on 1, and it's happening slowly. I really don't know. I think it's really, really difficult to predict at the moment. I think we've got plenty of talent, but it's very raw and a lot of it is on loan. So yeah, this season I think is still 100% about just getting over the line and surviving. And almost every front, I feel like this is like the beginning of a recovery. And if we yo-yo it, or as a Japanese ladder team it, then I feel like we might be back to square one. The crowds are slowly improving. 31,000 for the derby is actually, I think, the 5th largest for a Tokyo derby. So it's not that bad. And
Machida had 39,000 at the Kokuritsu at the same time. So.
I agree.
Support is, mate. You know, it's between our clubs.
And I think with Machida, that's they're kind of stuck where they are. We are kind of slowly, and I still feel like unless they can kind of maintain their fantastic bankrolling that they've got at the moment, fair play to them. I think they're going to struggle in the long term still to compete with obviously the FC Tokyo, but with a slowly resurgent Verdy as well. So like this entire season, I think, is entirely about just sticking in there until either we get some sort of slightly better investment model and begin to keep our players or whatever. But yeah, this season, I don't know. Like in terms of how we're going to survive, how we're going to do, don't know. But yeah, I really, really hope we put a few wins together and just stay in the fight until at least the end of the season, and then win the second derby. That'd be nice and all.
You mean the one against Machida? You know, that's your second derby.
I would take that as well. I don't worry, I've got enough of those guys either.
I wouldn't mind that either.
No, yeah, I think I don't think they've won very many hearts and minds, put it that way. I think that'll be a fun one to beat for any team.
Yeah.
Speaking of Machida, FC Tokyo's next opponents at Ajinomoto Stadium, Thomas. These young whippersnappers coming in to try and invade our territory. Hopefully we can we as FC Tokyo supporters can put them in their place on Saturday.
You know, they haven't also made very many friends in Tokyo either, because they've raided Verdy for their striker, and they've taken Suzuki off of us and also brought in Nasang Ho, who's also an ex-FC Tokyo player. They don't really want to make friends in Tokyo, do they? They seem keen to really annoy us. But yeah, I think that'll be a really good test for us. Like, I really hope the team that shows up is up for it from the off, because we can't make the same mistakes again. And I feel that Machida are still on their high right now. You know, what are they? I think they're third at the moment. I mean, they were top of the table, but you know, it's only by 2 points. It's going to be a really, really challenging match, and I hope that the fans are keen to show up for it, because I don't even know. We haven't really looked at this. Like, we look at it as another derby, but to us, it was Verdi. Like, that was the one we cared about. We didn't haven't really talked much about Machida, to be honest.
All right, thanks very much, Tom. And so, we'll bid you adieu first. Thanks for joining us on this episode, and reliving Saturday. As I said, hopefully Tokyo can get a result against Machida and start to show some consistency going forward. And we look forward to catching up with you down the road.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you again for having me. And Lewis, as much as I don't want to say it, good luck to you the rest of the season. Hopefully you guys will be back in J1 next season, and we can do this all again next year too.
Definitely. Yeah. Fully second that.
Yeah. Tremendous stuff, Lewis. As I say, we really appreciate you gutting through and joining us tonight. Sitting through the highlights and chatting through the game with us. Just as an FC Tokyo supporter, I'd like to say well played, and very, very hard lines, obviously, late on Saturday afternoon, but excellent performance from Verdi, and we wish you all the best going forward, and I hope to catch up with you on the pod again soon.
My pleasure. Yeah, absolutely. Always a good laugh. So always happy to help out and jump in whenever required.
Tremendous stuff. So thanks to Lewis and Tom. After a quick hit of music, Johnny and I will run through the rest of the J1 Match Day 8 results. Welcome back to part two. And once again, a big thanks to Tom and Lewis for their efforts in part one there. So, we'll begin the second part of the podcast with the leaders at the beginning of the match day, Machida Zelvia hosting the defending champions, Vissel Kobe, at the National Stadium. And as Tom mentioned towards the end of part one, a crowd of over 39,000 turned up at Kokuritsu for this game, although it's safe to say that a large number of punters turned out on free tickets. But definitely a good attendance number for Machida. But unfortunately, they have slipped down the table after a 2-1 defeat, Johnny, in a game, I guess, that was notable in some part for both teams fielding backup goalkeepers after both of their first choice stoppers were both sent off in match day 7.
Yeah, there seemed to be a fair few Kosei Tani fans in the crowd. I saw quite a lot of the green coloured Machida goalkeeper's uniform in the stands. And not just the goalkeepers, obviously the under 23s, that meant Hirakawa and Fujio were missing for Machida, and also Yuya Osako was missing through injury. I'm not quite sure what went wrong. It looked more like it was something along the lines of bruising. Maybe a Mariners player fell on him the previous week. But it's a big atmosphere in the stadium at Kokuritsu, and it was interesting what Sean said last week about how teams can approach games against Machida, and I felt like Vissel took it very, very seriously the whole 90 minutes. And previous games we've seen Machida have tended to start on the front foot, controlling the territory and kind of possession and getting an early goal. That didn't really happen in this game. I think Kakeru Yamauchi, who'd come in for his first start, he had a shot right at the beginning of the game. And it was kind of a bit end to end, and even a lot of kind of Machida's patented long throws were from a bit further out. And then I think the first half was fairly even, and then there was a kind of build up of pressure or build up of chances at the end of the first half from Vissel, and then Yamauchi got his first goal on his first start. And he's someone I think we briefly mentioned with Alan in pre-season about, he's come in from the University of Tsukuba, which is Kaoru Mitoma's kind of alma mater. And I believe he won the MVP in the Kanto, like Division 1, like University League, which is the kind of elite university league in the country. So he definitely comes in with a high pedigree. He's a former Vissel youth captain. And, feel free to bookmark this and laugh at me in a couple of years, but he wouldn't be the worst call as a sort of bolter for the next Japan World Cup squad, like someone who's nowhere near the squad now, but has a bit of potential to get his way in. Because Yeah, he's definitely very, very highly rated. And from his performance in this game, you know, he came in, Wiesel switched to more of a 4-4-2, so he was down the left wing, and they played Sasaki and Miyashiro in the centre, I guess, because Osako can kind of hold his own by himself, so that they went for the two up front, even if I think against Marinos, Miyashiro was up there with Osako quite a bit of the time anyway. But yeah, very, very competent display from Yamauchi. And I think, like we mentioned, talking with Lewis earlier, it was a very, very professional display by Wiesel all round.
Yeah, definitely. And Yamauchi, as you say, almost made an instant impact in his first J1 start. He almost headed in the first 15 seconds. But yes, he got the goal in the 45th minute that finally broke through for Wiesel just before the break. Taisei Miyashiro drove through midfield and set up Yoshinori Muto for a shot, which was blocked. But then the ball squirmed across the box and Yamauchi fired in, it must be said, especially confidently. It didn't appear to be a player lacking in confidence in his first J1 start, and a goal to mark it, and a fine one at that. The second half again seemed fairly even, Johnny, but as we've said, Wiesel, their professionalism, and you mentioned it in part one, shone through throughout this game. And they might have out-macheated Machida here in this occasion. We know how tough a nut to crack Machida have proven to be in the first seven or eight games, but Wiesel ultimately comfortably going 2-0 up with 2 minutes left when Nemuto himself lashed in a tremendous volley off the underside of the bar after he controlled a Ryo Hatsuse corner. Zelvia did get a consolation very deep into stoppage time, and it was an impressive one from a centre-back Ibrahim Drezovic, who looked like a centre-forward when he controlled a Takuya Yasui cross and shifted the ball onto his right foot before beating Wiesel keeper Shota Arai. But Wiesel claimed the 3 points to move to within two of their hosts. So, I mean, this is a significant result for Wiesel, Johnny, but it doesn't even take them above Zelvia in the table. And I mean, it's been somewhat of a slow start, I think, for Wiesel, but I think this is a reminder to the rest of the league that the defending champions are still going to be right there at the thick of things at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting you said that they kind of out Zelvia or out Machida. I almost saw it as the other way around, as maybe Machida looked at Wiesel as an inspiration, because, you know, the stereotype of Wiesel of the kind of Iniesta era of having, like, you know, 650 passes and losing 1-0 is completely changed last season by Yoshida. They're far more direct, far more aggressive. And, you know, this is a bit of a kind of like versus like, a strength versus strength battle. And it was quite interesting to have managed to watch a fair bit of Machida this season. And I think in an 11 versus 11 configuration, this is the most defending I've seen them had to do. Mm. And there's a few cracks started to appear. Drezovic took his goal really, really well. And he'd almost looked invincible defensively before this game. But a couple of kind of, he was given a couple of moments for thought by the Wiesel attack. And Wiesel, Hatsuse seemed to half the second half, which is him waiting to take free kicks or corners, and eventually one of them paid off with Muto's finish. So I think for Wiesel, that defeat last week at home to Marinos would have stung, and I think they'd be really happy to bounce back from that, and also without Osako in attack, because we've kind of speculated, you know, what would happen if Osako was missing or Muto was missing. And like I mentioned, Miyashiro and Sasaki were really good through the middle, and they had Muto on the right and Yamauchi on the left. They brought Jean-Patrick on in the second half. And if someone was there on a free ticket watching this game, and he'd said, you know, Wiesel Kobe's star striker's missing, they wouldn't have believed you, really. It didn't really seem that way. So I think they've had a kind of sticky start, maybe over egging it, because we're still quite early. But they would have liked to have a couple more points than they have, but I think this is a crucial victory for them. You know, Machida they'll be disappointed, but I mean, probably even they themselves don't consider themselves to be title contenders. So, a loss to the defending champions by a narrow margin, it shouldn't sting too much. And as we mentioned in the first part of the pod, they've got an intriguing prospect of the battle with FC Tokyo coming up to occupy their minds.
Yeah, most definitely. Just another quick one on Machida before we move on, Johnny. I mean, we know about the size of their squad, but we also know how important Fujio and Hirokawa have been in the first, you know, month, 6 weeks of the season. So that's a really big blow for them to have them out of the team, isn't it? Especially when Mitch Duke wasn't even fit enough to make the bench here, and we know that Eric isn't back in the picture yet. So I think that's a pretty big caveat, isn't it, on this result for Machida. I mean, their two best attacking players so far were taken out of the equation. I take your point on Osako missing for Vissel as well, but a team like Zelvia, who have relied so much on Fujio and Hirokawa in the early going, to have them yanked away, obviously, it goes without saying, left a huge hole.
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. Hirokawa has basically been their star turn in midfield, and a lot of the good stuff has gone through him. So that was a really tough one to fill, and Fujio as well. And yeah, Machida, in terms of numbers, Machida's squad is massive. In terms of like real depth, I think once you go beyond like 15 or 16 players in the squad, you're down to players like, it's dubious like how much J1 quality they actually have. So they have a very good 11 and a couple of subs, if fit, who can come on and change the game. But yeah, throwing all those kind of like, Hirokawa's an attacking midfielder, Fujio's a forward, Mitch Duke's a forward. I know Nasang Ho came back, but yeah, he's one of these players that I think, you know, he's done very well in the K-League, but I'm sure as FC Tokyo fans will remember his time there wasn't exactly particularly successful. So how good he will be in the long term for Machida remains to be seen. And maybe this just kind of highlights, you know, again, what Alan said about Vissel's depth in the pre-season. You know, they were missing, you know, Maekawa, the goalkeeper's suspended. Osako was out. Yuruki's injured as well. Ino, players like that, all out. But they've got the kind of depth that someone like Miyashiro to really step up in attack, and one of the best players from varsity football to come in midfield. So not really as big a problem for them. So, yeah it's a long season. It's 38 games. You're going to have games where your players will be missing for various reasons. And they've started really well. I don't see them as title contenders. There's no chance they're going to go down. So they're going to have future years in J1. So they're going to have to, they'll be able to build their squad kind of naturally over time. So, yeah, I think that they could rightly point out that they, like other teams, have missed a couple of players with the under-23s. But, you know, you have to look at that as an opportunity for other players to get a bit of experience and learn from this situation.
Yeah, fair enough. Well said, Johnny. And a good result for Vissel at the National Stadium, as Johnny says, bouncing back from that defeat to Yokohama F. Marinos in the previous round. All right, next we'll head to the Yodoko Sakura Stadium in Osaka, where Cerezo Osaka hosted Kawasaki Frontale, and it was a reunion with the former teammates for Cerezo's Kyohei Noborizato, who was, of course, part of Frontale's golden age of winning J1 titles and trophies galore. He came up against his former teammates for the first time on Saturday afternoon, and he finished it at the top of J1 as Cerezo defeated Frontale 1-0 to go clear on top of J1 for the first time since after match day 3 in 2020. And once again for Cerezo, it was that man Leo Ciara who did the business. He scored for the third straight game, and his goal in the 70th minute was enough for Cerezo to take all 3 points and, as I say, go top of the pile. And it came after a setup involving two of his fellow Brazilians. Lucas Fernandez drove through midfield and fed Capixaba on the left. Capixaba's cross was headed home at the back post by Leo Ciara, and that was that. It was a look to be an open and entertaining game, Johnny, just the one goal to show from it. But both teams, I thought, especially in the second half, from the highlights at least, were keeping the opposition goalkeepers busy, both Jun Sung Ryong for Kawasaki and indeed Kim Jin Hyun in the Cerezo goal had no time to rest on their laurels. There was plenty of goal mouth action at both ends, but ultimately Cerezo with a somewhat patched together defence, they've found their way to another clean sheet, and as I say, going top of the pile.
Yeah, I think this is quite a tight game, and yeah, I think Cerezo deserved to win it by the odd goal. I think that's a fair result. I think, yeah, in the first half, Sarasota were more on the front foot. They were more aggressive. And, you know, previously when we talked about the game a couple of weeks ago against Shonan, they were a bit susceptible to counterattacks. I mean, that's not really Frontale's style. And they only really did it once, I think, in the fifth minute, the start of the game. Marcinho broke away and he put it through to Erison, but he kind of ran a bit too wide. And Kim Jin-hyun, who's been excellent at all games this season, I think he stopped it quite comfortably. Other than that, yeah, I think Sarasota created some chances, especially through kind of pressuring Frontale in their own defensive third. But, maybe kind of high-quality chances or maybe a premium in the first half. And then, yeah, the second half, a bit of an arm wrestle. And as you mentioned, the two Brazilian wingers, they combined it. They doubled up on the left wing. And then, Capixaba crossing for Ciara. And he's just not missing at the moment for Sarasota. So, you know, they've got a good team. And having a top scorer like him at the sharp end is really helping them to pick up results in tight games like these. Frontale, a bit like against Machida. Again, if you look at the stats, they've had more shots than Sarasota. But then if you break the stats down further, I think half of those shots came after they went 1-0 down. And really, apart from that chance I mentioned earlier from Erison, they never really looked like getting beyond the Sarasota. A lot of the shots kind of came from the edge of the box. I know they brought on Patrick Verhon, I think for his J1 debut, he came on and put a Wakizaka. And he looked pretty handy late on, albeit it was when they were 1-0 down, so they were kind of chasing the game. So naturally, a bit more of the ball. I think regarding Naborizato, what I saw actually happening was Sarasota this kind of build-up style where, you know, Shunta Tanaka slips in between the two centre-backs when they're building up, and then they're putting the two full-backs, Maekuma and Naborizato, in front of them, so it becomes like a 3-2 in the build-up. I'm not quite sure what the advantage of that is, but that seems to be what they were doing. So Naborizato was playing at left-back when defending, and then almost as a sort of holding midfielder when they were building up from the back. They're definitely kind of trying out new things, Sarasota. So, yeah, I think 8 games, I don't think anyone can really complain. They've been the best team. They played really well, really attractive stuff in the early rounds, and then they've kind of ground out results like recently against Kawasaki here and Kashiwa and Shonan in recent weeks without playing brilliantly. They're taking their chances and they're doing well. I mean, they've never won J1 before, so there's no real pressure on at the moment. If they're still in this position come the summer, then I think that's when the pressure starts to get cranked up. But yeah, I think a really good start to the season from Sarasota. Yeah, Kawasaki, 5 defeats in 8 games, less points than games played. And we didn't mention it with Lewis, but the upcoming game against Verdy is two teams in the same, occupying the same part of the league table. So yeah, I noticed that I might have got this wrong, but yeah, there's a few gaps in the Kawasaki end at Sarasota, and it's not that big in the away end at the Sarasota Stadium. So I wonder if that's maybe, I've never noticed that before, if that's maybe a sign of kind of Frontale supporters starting to lose faith a little bit. So yeah, two teams that seem to be heading in opposite directions at the moment, I feel.
Absolutely, yeah, no question about that. As you say, Cerezo deservedly top after 8 games, but Frontale flailing around down in 16th and in desperate need of a jolt. Maybe the visit of Tokyo Verdy will give them that on Saturday. We shall wait and see. But to say it hasn't been a good start to the season is a massive understatement for the former Giants. All right, then. So we'll move on to, a series of games now with the teams 6th, 7th and 8th in the table after match day 8, all winning their games in this round by a goal to nil, I guess in similar style to the new leaders, Cerezo. We'll begin with Kashima, who defeated Kyoto 1-0 thanks to a terrific header from Kimito Nono. 5 minutes from time, and they did leave it late, Johnny, but I think they'd been knocking on the door pretty much the whole game, and it was Nono who finally provided the breakthrough. Nono had hit the bar 13 minutes after the break, and they finally made their pressure tell, and Kyoto left empty-handed.
Yeah, I think that this seemed like a kind of Kashima domination from start to finish. And the stats I saw, I think they did 18 shots to 8, and it's like XG was 2 to 0.5. Hayakawa didn't have any saves to make in the entire game. And yeah, they did leave it late. I think that they had a few chances in the second half. I think they hit the bar and hit the post. And then, yeah, Nono, who's actually, he's deceptively tall. He's got a kind of cute cartoonish face, which makes you think he's a bit smaller than he is, but I think he's about 180 centimetres, could even go in at centre-back if need be. But this was he provided a kind of classic Kashima goal, his first ever goal in J1, you know, the crossover, Sekigawa heads it back to him, and then he leaps highest. And yeah, I think, yeah, well deserved. I think what one there was the least that Kashima deserved from this game. They will be happy because they've had a few issues kind of in front of goal. I think that they'd only had that contentious penalty against Jubilo as their only goal for in the previous three games. So yeah, I think the result, kind of getting back on track after that, you know, losing to FC Tokyo last week, I think that was key for them, and then the hope to kind of move on from that. Kyoto, I think, you know, I think me, you and Sam were all reasonably positive about them in pre-season, but they've kind of been struck by injuries in defence and in midfield, and then that's not helped. They're missing Daiki Kaneko in midfield, and then Kawasaki, he's away with the under-23s. And then, they had 171-centimetre tall Miyamoto at centre-back. They seem to have real issues keeping their centre-backs fit, apart from Asada. And yeah, they haven't scored in the last three games. The attack's not really working well, and they've now got into the bottom three. So yeah, they're really in need of a result of something going their way, because their season's really not taking the shape they would have hoped it would. So never the easiest place to go, Kashima. But yeah, Kyoto, I think they've got a bit of thinking to do ahead of the upcoming fixtures.
Yeah, most definitely. One of the five teams with only one win through the first eight games of the season, Sanga. And yes, they're on a pretty barren run at the moment, no doubt about that. Also winning 1-0 was Kashiwa Reysol at home against Urawa in the only game played last Friday night. For visiting Reds, Thiago Santana almost gave them the lead for the third straight game, but his ninth-minute volley from Samuel Gustafsson's corner bounced just over the bar, and that was to be as close as either team came to a goal in the first half. 9 minutes after the break, Reysol defender Diego saw his point-blank header saved with his leg by Shusaku Nishikawa, and the hosts made the breakthrough in the 72nd minute. Kosuke Kinoshita, their hero, off the bench for the second straight game as he swiveled to volley in a cross in from the right by Reysol creator-in-chief Mateus Savio. So, yes, you look at the table, Johnny, and there's Kashiwa up in seventh. They moved above Reds with this victory, and, well, it looks like they're definitely putting their Anas Horribilis of last year well and truly behind them.
Well, yes, it's every second year they finish seventh in the league, so they've already reached that
they're
target.
They're already there, yeah.
And yeah, we mentioned last week kind of jokingly about how many Kashiwa games finish 1-1, but only one game this season involving Kashiwa hasn't finished in a 1-0 win or a 1-1 draw, and that was against Nagoya, who I'm sure we'll come on to. Their results have no rhyme or reason to it. And yeah, even the goal they scored here, it was the same combination as the last time, with Mateus Savio cross on the right, this time kicked in by Kinoshita rather than headed in, but he really similar every Kashiwa game. I think, yeah, for them, they'll be absolutely delighted to get this result. Reds is a tough opponent. Urawa, so five of their eight games have been away from home, and the only win they've got from those five has been away at struggling Sapporo. So that's got to be a concern from them. They look great at home, but yeah, away from home, you know, Schultz was back on the bench for this game, and I think Sato he claimed he took responsibility for not blocking the shot that went in. I don't think it really was his fault, but that didn't really seem to be the issue. There seemed to be a lack of kind of connectivity amongst the attackers, and Reds they only logged one shot on target in the whole game, and so that's got to be a bit of a concern going forward if they can't kind of get it done on the road. They fixed the home issue of always drawing 0-0 or really struggling to break down opponents, but now away from home they're having a bit of a hard time. So now we'll see how they do going forward, but there's still plenty of work for them ahead. Whether it takes kind of into the summer, you know, they've got the new coach Hegmo, and he's kind of assessing the squad, and you know, a lot of their players, especially in the attacking areas, you know, you look at them, what is that, a right winger or a left winger, or can they play attacking midfield or one of the inside half positions? So he's definitely having to kind of shuffle the deck to find the best combination, and he hasn't quite stumbled upon it yet. So yeah, he may kind of tweak a couple of things in the summer. You might see a couple of even bigger names might leave, and then maybe a couple of foreign players or Japanese players might come in before they really kind of hit their straps. But yeah, maybe slightly kind of anxious times for Urawa, as you mentioned, into the bottom half of the league in the very, very early stages. You'd still expect them to move up. But yeah, Kashiwa, it's all going pretty well. I know they're missing Hosoya. He's away at the under-23s in Sekine. But as we kind of mentioned in pre-season, like Ihara does have a kind of deep knowledge of the kind of youth system. And you know, a lot of these players are coming through the youth system and go to universities and come back. So he's been kind of in slowly but surely kind of integrating a few players into the midfield. You know, you saw the Kumasaka and Kumasawa, if I got their names right, they've been getting more involved. And you've had Yamada, Tsuchiya, you've got in Sekine from university, obviously. So yeah, not the most glamorous signings, but I think the coach seems to understand the players he has at his disposal, and he uses them very, very well, and they're hard to beat. And not the most exciting to watch, but you know, Matias Savio is definitely, he's a killer player in J1. So yeah, Kashiwa fans, I'm not going to put the markers on them, but I think they can dare to believe that they're in for a better season this year than last.
Yeah, certainly early returns are positive, and a result like Friday night's will definitely give them confidence going forward, I'm sure, as we head into the very busy run of Golden Week games. Also winning 1-0 in match day 8 was Nagoya Grampus. They moved up to 8 in the table with a 1-0 win away at Iwata, who were once again, Johnny, Jekyll and Hyde. I've been trying to work out over the last couple of weeks which one's the good one and which one's the bad one. Well, Iwata were definitely Jekyll and Hyde again, and unfortunately for their home supporters, turned in a bit of a stinker on their home patch. But Nagoya, for them, this was very much a Jekyll and Hyde performance from Ken Masui, no doubt about that.
Yeah, so if, it seems like a common theme of players getting their first J1 goal this year. And maybe interestingly, because Masui and Kimito Nono, they were both teammates at Kansai Gakuin last year, and they both scored their first J1 goal on the same weekend. So a bit of symmetry there. But yeah, I'm sure, it's a cross. It all ends up and it misses everyone and creeps beautifully into the bottom corner of the goal. And yeah, as you say, he blotted his copybook later on. I think a bit like Soma Anzai, who's another university graduate who was red carded this weekend. I think maybe over exuberant rather than malicious, I would say. I think he's just, he'll learn from that. You can't go in challenging like that. But a clear red card. And luckily for him and Grampus, Jubilo were in there. We could play this game for 24 hours and we wouldn't score a conversion, but rather than the couldn't miss version we saw versus Kawasaki in Kyoto. So I mean, Grampus a bit like Jubilo, I can't, I'm not really sure what to make of them, because they're 5 unbeaten now, and they've only conceded 4 in the 7 games since that kind of opening day horror show. But I was kind of looking through the stats earlier, and they have recorded the fewest amount of shots of any team in J1, which after 8 rounds is not necessarily something to worry about too much. But what really shocked me, and I had to double check this, they've actually recorded 20 fewer shots than any other team in J1, with the second worst being Sapporo. So,
wow.
They've definitely turned things around, but it's kind of hard to say it's not really been anything to do with luck. I think on another day they could have drawn this 1-1 or lost 2-1. They've definitely kept it tighter at the back, but they seem to basically be scoring every shot or every cross that goes in. So yeah, they look like the form team, but if they keep up this kind of form without Juncker's not there, Langerak's not there, you can see their good run coming to an end sometime soon, I think.
Yeah, it's a little bit smoke and mirrors, I think, at the moment for Grampus. But yes, they did take the lead in the 8th minute at the Yamaha Stadium. I'm sure Sam Robson will be claiming this was a shot, but Ken Masui's in-swinging cross from the left sailed across the box beyond Eiji Kawashima and crept inside the far post. But 3 minutes before the break. Masui turned from hero to villain when he leapt into a challenge with Ricardo Grassa in midfield and caught the Iwata defender flush on the ankle, a straight red card if ever I've seen one. I'm sure not even my son would have any arguments with that decision. Iwata, I mean, they dominated things with a man advantage, but as Johnny said, yes, we could still be playing this game now and they wouldn't have scored. Rio Germain did hit the outside of the post with 10 minutes left, and Bruno Jose will still be wondering how he didn't score in the 87th minute when he was denied by a sliding goal line block by Takuya Uchida. But Grampus hung on playing the entire second half with 10 men to go eighth in the table. And next we'll turn to Johnny's big day out at the Panasonic Stadium in Suita. And Johnny, well, as I say, I'm surprised you still had a voice when we started this podcast, but what an occasion it must have been for you. I mean, Thomas and I have spoken in part one about how ecstatic we were to see FC Tokyo snatch that late equaliser against Verdy. Well, Gumba left it until the 99th minute to seal their 2-1 victory over visiting Tosu. I can't imagine how you must have celebrated that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I sent you a video earlier of Park Hyo-ju saving Usami's free kick from my vantage point, and you know, I was basically looking down the barrel behind Mira's shot in the final, right at the end. I think Saigo no Saigo is what they say in Japanese, like the end of the end. Mm. And yeah, you know, the white ball going into the white goal with the white sponsors boards behind it, it's like, has that actually gone in? And then, yeah, there was a sort of delayed reaction and everyone cheered because, you know, we did so many kind of false dawns. Even the first goal that came in, it's like, is that over the line? What's happening? That no one seemed to know. Mm. And then there was the sending off, and then there was the goal disallowed, and then multiple corners, multiple saves. And then, you know, even right just before that, you thought that Yokoyama broke away and Ichimori had to bail Gamba out. You think, like when Lewis was talking about, you know, if we concede one, we'll concede two, and then at the end, we'll concede three. I think Gamba fans have been through the ringer before with late goals, especially at the hands of Cerezo. You're kind of thinking, yeah, what more can go wrong here? But yeah, finally, yeah, but by hook or by crook, they got it done. And not everyone's fully into like expected goals, but Gamba are now first in J1 for expected goals if you take out penalty kicks, and they logged out almost four in this game, but it had to take the 99th minute to get the goal. Genta Muir, we've not always seen eye to eye, but yeah, I was chanting his name when the ball went in. And yeah, Sagan Tosu, I mean, if I was to rank J1 teams in terms of how much I like them, I think they could probably crack my top three. But yeah, after drawing 1-1 with them twice last season and just like having shot after shot saved or blocked, and then what we'd gone through for 99 minutes, just yeah, the sheer relief around the Panasonic Stadium was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, outstanding. So happy for you that you had such a terrific ending to things. But I mean, this was a wild and woolly game throughout. I think it's safe to say Gumba headed against the bar twice inside the first half hour, but then 8 minutes before halftime, Yoichi Naganuma dribbled through midfield and fired just wide for the visitors. And then 4 minutes later, Naganuma headed Tosu in front after a cross from Kohei Tezuka. But deep into first half stoppage time, and a hint of what was to come in the second half, obviously, Gumba equalised just after a mad scramble ensued following a Takashi Usami free kick from deep on the right. Issa Sakamoto shot just creeping over the line before it was hacked away. Credit to the linesman for initially giving the goal, which was confirmed by VAR. But then the second half just if the first half was wild and woolly, then I think I ran out of expletives to describe the second half. A Tosu defender Keisuke Sakaya was sent off for dog sewing down Welton 11 minutes after the break, though VAR overturned the referee's decision of a penalty. So what did you see of that on the screen in the stadium, Johnny? Did they show all of that? And were you satisfied with the ultimate decision of a free kick rather than a penalty?
Well, if I can kind of link the confusion around that with the confusion around Sakamoto's goal, because you might, if you're listening to the highlights, you might have like be confused that where was the Gamba cheering after the goal, because there was complete confusion in the stadium. I was one of the few that, as you mentioned, the linesman flag went up when the ball, like at the time you'd have thought the ball crossed the line. So I raised my hands in the air and nearly smacked a guy next to me in the face and had to apologise. But no one else around me reacted. So I thought, well, he's given the goal. And then the ref, looking at the referee, he said, I think the referee told the players, I've given the goal, the assistant's given the goal, we'll check it. But he ushered the Gamba players back to their half. And then he told the Tosu players to stay in their half. And then it came up checking goal if the ball had crossed the line. There was no like video replay, it just said that. And then the referee blew his whistle and said there was a goal. And then there was a loud roar around the stadium. And then it was basically half time. So, you know, Gamba fans have got their kind of chant they do when Gamba scored a goal. And they basically did that at the start of the second half because there was no time to do it in the first half. So they started the second half doing that.
Right.
And then, you know, Sakamoto, who is one of my favourites. And one of my Gamba friends actually said that someone had posted on Twitter that a foreign man sitting next to him in the stadium had said good things about Sakamoto. So that wasn't me, but yeah, I definitely agree with that man's tastes. And yeah, he was outstanding in this game, Sakamoto. I was so happy for him to get his goal. And it's his swivel and brilliant through pass to Wilton. And yeah, I felt sorry for young Sakaya. That's his first start as well. And he's basically had to take one for the team to take Wilton down. I thought the ref had given a penalty and sent the player off, which, I mean, vis-a-vis our discussion about Song Boom-Koon's red card last week, kind of put the warning sign up for me. What's actually going on here? Because that shouldn't be a red card and a penalty. And then we weren't shown any replays of the decision. It was just said that there was no penalty and a free kick right in the edge of the box, which the first couple of times I saw it when I watched the highlights later, I wasn't really convinced it was a free kick, but I think it probably just got it right. But yeah, kind of swiveling back to Sakamoto, because Kota Yamada's been out injured for the last kind of few weeks, and Sakamoto's came in the kind of number 10 role off Usami. And it was interesting because he did an interview with Akira Kaji on Gamba's YouTube channel last week, and he was talking about his time on loan at Okayama last year. And it didn't go too well because I think he started the season well, then he got injured and he was away at the Under-20 World Cup, and then he wasn't quite back in the team and wasn't quite scoring. But he was actually very complimentary about both Okayama and Takashi Kiyama, the coach, about helped him to develop his all-round game, his awareness and his defensive capabilities. And yeah, he really had a really good game. He was really involved, picking up the balls in dangerous areas, swiveling, finding teammates. And that pass to Wilton was world-class. So he played a key role in that. So yeah, I wanted to sing his praises because yeah, he's on my away shirt. So he's my mini Usami. So yeah, we're really happy for him to get the goal. And then yeah, I'm sure you're going to go on to describe it. Very much became attack against defence for 99% of the time after that.
Well, indeed, yeah. So Tosu had to play the last 30 odd minutes of the 90 with 10 men, but as we've said, the stoppage time extended to well over 10 minutes. So they basically played a half of football with only 10 men. And Johnny's favourite Sakamoto had the ball in the net again in the 65th minute, but the goal was disallowed for offside in the build-up. Then Darwin headed over, Wilton headed straight at Park, and Neta Lavi drew a leaping save from Park. Though, as Johnny's mentioned, Tosu sub Ayumu Yokoyama gave them a spark and drew a fine stop from Jun Ichimori in the 8th of 9 posted stoppage time minutes. But then Gamba won it in the most dramatic of circumstances in the 99th minute when Usami sent over a cross from deep on the left. Isam Jabali chested down and Genta Miura's deflected shot flew into the net to spark wild scenes on the terraces at the Panasonic Stadium. So, a much-needed victory, Johnny. And, I mean, it takes you up into the top half of the table in 10th, the same number of points as FC Tokyo. So, I guess a result that you had to have, especially coming against 10 men. A draw just wouldn't have been good enough here. And the manner of the victory and the dramatic circumstances will hopefully just give the players a massive boost for a testing run of fixtures ahead.
Yeah, I think for both these sides, this might be kind of seen as make or break, because you know Gamba had started the season quite well, picked up some decent results, especially away to like Machida and Hiroshima. But then the recent results, you know, they drew 0-0 at home to Kyoto. They had chances to win that. obviously lost away to Sapporo, was disappointing. And then the Mariners game, they had so many chances that they just could not hit the target. And, you know, people have been critical, myself included, of Danny Poyatos, but I felt quite sorry for him, because he put the team out and the team almost executed everything perfectly, but they just could not hit the target, and they lost the game. They should have won 2-0. They lost it 2-0. So that was kind of three results in the trot, which things hadn't gone well and they hadn't scored. And then, yeah, Tosso at home is Gamba's favourite banana skin, bottom of the league at home. And, yeah, when they start the game off with hitting the bar twice and then they concede a goal from Tosso's, like, one good spell in the first half, you think, yeah, well, what's going on here? So to battle back from that, yeah, I think it's very important they went into half-time level. And then, yeah, the dramatic late winner, I think, as you say, it moves them into the last place in the top half. And there was a bit of kind of belief around the place that things might be a bit better than last season. I think, yeah, Ichimori with a save, he's been fantastic since he's come in. Nakatani, seeing him in the flesh, I mean, he is so much better than any defender Gamba have had in recent memory. I think he brings so much defensively. So, yeah, it's by no means Gamba are not the finished article. I mean, I know I was joking with my friend, we're now most expected goals. So, now we just need to send Anderson Lopez to finish the chances we're creating, and then the title's ours for the taking. But it's not that simple. But yeah, there's tough fixtures coming up. Urawa, Kashima, Cerezo in the end of Golden Week. So they'll have to buck their ideas up a bit. Tosu, yeah, you know, bottom of the table. And you might, you know, I was going on about them last year about how they were kind of nicking results. This time, yeah, it seems like the luck's just run out a bit. They got themselves in front, but they couldn't hold on to half time. And then, yeah, it's hard not to feel sorry for them, but then it's hard not to say that justice wasn't really served. You know, was it 28 shots to 11? And I think I've counted that, if you include last season's 2-1-1 draws, Gamba have had 41 more shots than Tosu in the last three games between the two sides, and only scored one more goal. I mean, it just became a numbers game after a bit of time. And yeah, you almost, if you're Tosu, if you're Kawhi, or you're one of the fans of the players, you might kind of wish you just conceded a penalty and lost 2-1 thanks to a penalty, rather than hold on almost till the end and then get that sucker punch. So yeah, as we mentioned last week with Sean, I think they're in a bad way, and it's difficult to see them. Very early days yet, but it's hard to see how Kawhi can kind of pick the troops up from here, and what changes they can make, because the squad doesn't look that strong. And yeah, they're just struggling week after week, and the things that went their way last year are not really going their way this year. So yeah, I really, really like Sagan Tosu, but this is going to be a real, real tough season for them, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. Their only win of the season so far coming in match day 2 against Sapporo. And since then, they only have 1 point to show from the last 6 games. That was the home draw against defending champions Kobe. But yeah, all the other games have been lost. And yes, they slipped to the foot of the table with Sapporo drawing in this round, and we'll come on to that game, Sapporo away at Niigata, in just a minute. But yeah, we'll wrap up the episode then with the three other draws apart from the Tokyo Derby played in this match day. We'll begin down at the Best Denki Stadium, where Fukuoka and Hiroshima shared the spoils, and both goals here came in a quick burst inside the first half hour, after Hiroshima keeper Keisuke Osako made a couple of decent saves in the early going. There was nothing he could do about Fukuoka going ahead in the 22nd minute. Masato Yuzawa twisting the blood of Shunki Higashi out on the right, and then crossing for Shahab Zahidi to power in a header for his third league goal of the season. But Sanfrecce were behind for only 3 minutes. Makoto Mitsuta's corner headed in by visiting captain Shoal Sasaki. 7 minutes after the break, the Yuzawa Zahidi hotline almost bore fruit for Fukuoka again, but the Iranians' improvised volley from Yuzawa's cross struck the outside of the post. And from there, Johnny, I think the point for each team just about seemed like a fair result. Hiroshima, I guess they'll be slightly disappointed not to carry on their early season momentum, but this sees them second in the table, while Fukuoka have definitely been up and down to this point of proceedings. But for them, a second straight draw, and at this stage, they seem to be fairly well entrenched in mid-table again.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest takeaway was how well Fukuoka were able to stifle Hiroshima. And maybe for Hiroshima, maybe a slight worry, I guess, the fact they were so well stifled in one of the recent away games at Vissel Kobe. And maybe to a certain extent, you know, Gamba and FC Tokyo, they took draws from Hiroshima. They didn't stifle them to that extent, but maybe for a good 70, 75 minutes of the game, they were able to kind of hold them at bay. And I know they've had a few kind of injuries in attack with like Pierros, I think, is out, or Ezekiel and Douglas Vieira, that they're not in the squad. So if you look at Hiroshima's starting 11, it's a very, very formidable lineup. But the bench has featured quite a lot of kind of younger players and less experienced players. So I think Michael Skipper doesn't really have the options he would necessarily like to change things up when it's not going so well. So yeah, four draws, four wins is a decent start for most teams. But if you're gunning for the title, it's maybe a few too many draws. So I think that they'll definitely be looking to improve from that respect. Fukuoka, I think, yeah, Shahab Zahidi, he's looked really good since he's come in. Three goals and one assist from five games. And yeah, as you mentioned, Yuzawa's, he's always kind of struck me as a very functional player. I wasn't really expecting the kind of skills we saw from him. So if him and Zahidi can strike up that hotline, that'll definitely help Fukuoka out. And yeah, from then, I think it's maybe a sign of how much they've grown, that you might see this kind of mid-table start has been a bit disappointing from them, that they're not back up in that kind of seventh place where they were last season. But yeah, I think once Zahidi gets a bit more entrenched in the lineup, and I know Connell was on the bench, I think they brought in Shigemi, so that maybe gave them a bit more defensive stability against Hiroshima. But if they can get, Connell and Zahidi working in unison, and Iwasaki involved as well, yeah, hopefully they can kind of kick on into the top half of the table. But for now, they're looking a very, very solid mid-table outfit.
Yes, indeed. Agreed there. All right, so the other big derby in the match day was the Kanagawa derby between Yokohama F. Marinos and Shonan at the Nissan Stadium. And just like the Tokyo derby at Ajinomoto, this game finished 2-2. F. Marinos were coming in on the back of that 2-0 victory over Gamba in their game in hand last Wednesday night that Johnny had mentioned before. Such a difficult one for Gamba to take after they'd almost doubled up F. Marinos in the shot count. And with the Wednesday night's ACL semi-final first leg against Ulsan in mind, Harry Kuehl named a much-changed lineup against Shonan, and one of his youngsters, forward Kento Shiogai, took his chance when he gave the hosts a 21st-minute lead, tapping in a Kota Mizunuma cross from inside the six-yard box. Mizunuma not giving up on a bouncing ball near the byline that Lukian had decided was going to run out of play and had given up on. And Mizunuma kept on going and maybe just about got the ball before it crossed the line, and Shiogai did the rest. Shiogai was denied a second by Belmare keeper Hiroki Mawatari just past the half hour. But the visitors drew level 4 minutes before the break when Taiyo Hiraoka swept home a first-time shot from just inside the box after some pinball wizard in the D. 3 minutes after the restart, F. Marinos went back in front when Nam Tehee fired in after Mawatari spilled what looked a comfortable catch of Yuta Koike's long-range shot. And when Kazuki Oiwa was shown a dog-so-straight red inside the last 15 minutes for bringing down sub Anderson Lopez on the edge of the box, Shonan's goose looked cooked. But after Lukian led a counter-attack with 10 minutes left, Shonan sub Sho Fukuda sent a shot just inside William Pope's right-hand post to earn 10-man Belmare a battling point. So, the echoes of the Ajinomoto Stadium game here are quite eerie, aren't they, Johnny? The game finished 2-2. The visiting team were down to 10 men, but fought back late on to claim a point. And again, I think we mentioned this a couple of times in the early going this season. Shonan just haven't got the results that some of their performances, I think, have deserved to this point. So when you see them down in 17th, just 2 points off the bottom, it obviously looks like it's been a very rough start for them. And to be fair, I mean, they haven't won in the last five at least in the form table. But yeah, this is hopefully for them a really positive result that can give them some belief going forward. For F Marinos, they obviously have a huge game on the horizon on Wednesday. I'm not suggesting they were taking their eyes off Belmare at all, but yeah, a disappointing result for them, no question, to let the lead slip so late against 10 men.
Yeah, yeah, I think that this was basically a game between two teams whose attacks are far better than the defences. You know, Shonan haven't kept a clean sheet yet, and they've conceded two or more in six of their eight games so far. So it's clear to see where the work needs to be done there. But they did very well to take their two chances. You know, we mentioned I was having a bit of a moan about the Gamba game, but I think in the Vissel Kobe, you know, Marinos beat Vissel Kobe last week. They beat Gamba midweek. You know, if they'd come through this week of three very hard fixtures with 9 points, that would have been incredible. But I think, you know, Vissel and Gamba combined had 40 shots in those two games, and they gave up another 16 here. So, yeah, again, extremely good at taking chances up the other end, Marinos, but they do give you a chance at the other end. And in fairness to them, because I was moaning about Gamba's fixture away at Sapporo last week, and Marinos have five J1 games and two very big ACL games in the month of April. So I think they've got it tougher than anyone else. So mass changes like you mentioned, but very interesting to see Kento Shiogai coming in, because he's only a second year student at KL University, so he won't be turning pro for another few years yet. And he's actually the same age as someone you might see in the Japan under 23 squad, Kotaro Uchino, who came through Marinos' youth system, and I think he's at Tsukuba University. So the future looks bright for Marinos looking at those two in attack. He looks a very, very handy player, Shiogai. Yeah, I think the big thing I wanted to mention in this, a slight rant, is the Dogsville red card. And I'm not having to go at the match officials for the decision with the rules as they stand, but a bit like my previous rants about non-deliberate handballs and it being a bit too easy to get a penalty, I think now what you're seeing is too many players just kind of milking the system, in that they get goals out of the defender and think, well, the job is done here, I'll just milk a tiny bit of contact and fall down. And, you know, you could objectively kind of measure, well, there is contact and the attacker has fallen down and the defender is the last defender. In this situation, I mean, who hits who? Is it Anderson Lopez hits Oyewa or the other way around? It looks at best a 50-50. And, you know, knowing the way that forwards' minds work, I think Anderson Lopez is very happy to take the contact and go down. And I would argue, you know, that Dogzo, can you call it Dogzo if the forward doesn't really have any intention of scoring the goal and is just trying to get the player sent off? I think we've seen a ton of sendings off in the first kind of eight rounds of the season. And it's, yeah, I would say if it's non-deliberate, you know, if Oyewa hauls Anderson Lopez's shirt down or he goes for the ball and just slides in, but yeah, fair enough, it's a red card. But this kind of just the legs slightly touch and the forward falls down theatrically, I've had enough of seeing these things ending up in red cards. So what do you think, Ben? Would you agree, or where do you stand?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a rash of them in the first couple of months of this season. I mean, yeah, we had five red cards in this match day, and yeah, I think two or three were Dogso, and yeah, I mean, like you said, in the Gamba Tosu game, I mean, Sakai is absolutely nailed on, but in an instance like this, yeah, it's harsh, and it's a difficult one for Oyewa to take, obviously. But I mean, he was obviously well and truly resigned to his fate by the time the decision was verified by VAR. So it's yeah, hopefully we can this is just a brief pattern in games, and they won't be happening quite as often, because obviously there's often drama around games when teams are down to 10 men. For the sake of the game as a whole, you want to see as many finish 11v11 as is possible. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, for Belmare, a creditable point here, and for F Marinos, they're moving on to, as we've said, a huge one for their club on Wednesday night away at Ulsan. All right, yeah. So the last game that we'll round up also had a red card in it, and it was played up at the Big Swan, where Niigata hosted Sapporo, and Niigata hit the bar with a pair of shots inside the first 10 minutes from Yota Komi and Motoki Hasegawa, but Sapporo took the lead in the 20th minute when Yuya Asano's first-time shot from 25 yards went in off the underside of the bar. That was his first goal of the season. 2 minutes later, Niigata keeper Ryosuke Kojima made a point-blank save to deny Asano a quick fire second, and 6 minutes before the break, Eitaro Matsuda was denied an equaliser by a sliding block from Hiroki Miyazawa. 15 minutes from time, Sapporo's hopes of hanging on for a second straight win were dented when Shingo Omori was harshly shown a second yellow card for a what appeared to be a soft foul from behind on Komi, and 5 minutes after that, Niigata captain Hiroki Akiyama's 30-yard strike skimmed off the head of Daihachi Okamura and flashed into the net beyond Takanori Sugano. So, well, they are dancing on the streets of Sapporo, Johnny, as Consadole are off the foot of the table for the first time in a while. As we've said, Tosu now the new residents of the cellar, but well, yeah, it could have been so much better for Consadole if it wasn't for, in my eyes, a harsh decision from the referee to send off Omori. But yeah, I guess Niigata deserve credit for working their way back and claiming a point through Akiyama's deflected strike.
Yeah, I definitely agree about the Omori second yellow card. I think the way I saw it, a bit like the, I think it was the Inami of Verdi got sent off against Cerezo a few weeks back. And I said, like, if it was a higher profile player, you know, say like a Kagawa or Nagatomo Usami, someone that's played in a World Cup, I think the referee would think twice about it. It might give him a final warning and wouldn't produce a second yellow. Or if this was, say, like a game played 3 or 4 games from the end of the season, that might have a bearing on the title. Yeah, I think the referees would think twice. I think Omori and Sapporo can feel quite harshly done to. I mean, by the letter of the law, I'm sure the decision is actually correct. But yeah, I think referees will often apply context when it suits them, and chose not to in this case. And yeah, for Sapporo as a whole, yeah, they're off the bottom of the table, which is huge. And I mean, they have kind of controlled the bleeding to an extent. I think the recent 3 games against, I know they lost to Grampus, but the performance was much better. And then they won against Gamba, and then they've managed to draw here. Whether it is this kind of start of a slow and steady climb up the league, it remains to be seen. I still have my doubts. Niigata, I think they'd probably be a kind of excellent coaching course, like case study about all the rotation they do or like their style of play. But I'm sorry to say that they're never particularly exciting to watch. Whenever I kind of look at the highlights and I think, oh, where's Ben going to put them on in the podcast? They usually go into the final 2 or 3 games. And yeah, this was a 1-1. It was keenly fought. I don't see there being too many like 3-3s or 4-2 games involving Niigata. But I think, yeah, the way that this game started with them hitting the frame of the goal twice and then kind of getting punished down the other end, I don't think they'll be too unhappy about the draw. They might have seen this coming into this game. They would have fancied a win. But, you know, the way things panned out, probably a 1-1 was a fair enough result. And, yeah, neither side particularly pleased, but neither side too devastated, I think, with the share of the spoils.
Indeed, indeed. All right, then. So that's all 10 games from J1 Match Day 8 rounded up. We'll finish off the episode with a brief check of what's to come, firstly in the next few days and then in the next round of top flight action. Of course, we've mentioned in a number of these games that we've reviewed, teams that have players away with Japan's under-23s. Will they kick off their under-23 Asian Cup / Olympic qualification campaign on Tuesday when they play China in the first game of the group stage of that competition. Then on Wednesday, and we've just referenced it, Yokohama F. Marinos have the first leg of their ACL semi-final against Ulsan of South Korea. The return leg is at the Nissan Stadium next Wednesday, the 24th. And also on Wednesday, we have 11 Levain Cup second round ties taking place, with J1 teams drawn away from home against the second or third tier opposition. And the other nine ties, seven of which feature J1 teams, will be played next Wednesday, the 24th. So, yeah, it's obviously it's a fascinating set of games in prospect in the Levain Cup. Johnny, any particular banana skins that you think these J1 teams should be extremely cautious about on Wednesday night?
I think a couple I'd pick out, maybe like, I don't know if you can we even call it a banana skin, a Jubilo away to Viva and Nagasaki, who are going kind of great guns in J2. I mean, that would probably be on the BBC, that would be the match of the day, that the one that they would pick on the Sunday afternoon, because they think a shock, or in inverted commas, would happen in that one. Yeah, I think you might say that's quite an even game, Nagasaki, with their, you know, Edgar Junior and Juanma Delgado, former Gamba player Matias Jesus as well, is going great guns. So they'll definitely fancy their chances there. You might even see Vissel Kobe going away to Imabari in J3. Imabari are decent side in J3. And maybe even Omiya against Nagoya, which not too many years ago would have been a J1 battle.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, given Nagoya's kind of recent, you know, the results have been good, but the form has not been so great. And Omiya have got players like Kenyu Sugimoto as well, who no stranger to J1 fans. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. And obviously, you know, your FC Tokyo have got a kind of local match against YSCC Yokohama. Yeah, any thoughts on that one?
Well, yeah, I mean, we often slip up on banana skins in the Emperor's Cup. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if YSCC threw a spanner in our works on Wednesday night. Obviously, you would expect FC Tokyo to be too strong. But, yeah, you never know. The magic of the cup, et cetera, et cetera. I'd pick out Iwaki versus Niigata as well, Johnny, as a potential upset. Iwaki mid-table in J2. And, yeah, we've just talked about Niigata. They're just a spluttering along at the moment. So, yeah, potential for an upset there. And Lewis's Tokyo Verde are away at Kagoshima, a lovely part of Japan, obviously. So, any green supporters heading down to Kagoshima in the midweek, I'm sure they'll have a lovely time down there. And I know he came back into the team in the weekend in J3, so there's potentially a chance for fans of J1 to get another glimpse of Yuya Hashiuchi and his Matsumoto Yamaga team. They'll be up against Avispa Fukuoka on Wednesday night, so maybe we'll see the great man in action against a J1 opponent again. And just in general, Johnny, again, we want to move along and wrap up the episode, but this incarnation of the Levain Cup, for me personally, it's something that I've wanted to see for a number of years now. I thought that the group stage of the Levain Cup had gotten stale, and while I appreciate that it had become a breeding ground for some young players, where some teams had chosen to, you know, obviously rotate and play in inverted commas a second string team or a youth team on occasion. And that certainly had its appeal, and a lot of people were big fans of that. For me personally, I'm really glad to see that they've incorporated J2 and J3 teams into it as well. And the fact that they've drawn the lower league teams at home against the top flight opposition should be great for those areas locally, and inject some money in with some visiting supporters coming in to the prefecture and the city. And for me, I'm all for it. Are you generally in agreement, or do you yearn for the older days of the Levain Cup?
It's a tough one, because I know this has been kind of talked about on JTET in short corner, and it's the first year of the competition, so I think it's very difficult to kind of jump to conclusions how it will be. I mean, I know I was kind of missing slightly when there was in March, when there was the international break, because normally there'd been like a Saturday or Sunday round of Levain Cup games, so it was an extra kind of round of games for me to see, especially kind of get younger players that have just come up from the youth team or universities. You get to see those players kind of turn out. So I mean, yeah, there were like fans of the Levain Cup group stage. I didn't mind it too much myself. I mean, my team in Scotland, the Ayr, they've been for most of my life, they've been very poor in the league, but have been a very good cup team. So I've always had a kind of big affinity for cup teams or cup competitions. And I want to see how this little Van Cup, how it plays out this year. My greatest kind of fear is, or fear is maybe too strong a word, but I think, you know, when the J League started, they obviously looked to Europe and what they were doing in certain leagues. And, you know, some places like Scotland and England, they have a League Cup and an FA Cup, and they've obviously copied that. I just wonder if the appetite is not really there in Japan to have two cup competitions. And mm-hmm. I guess my kind of fear down the line is that, it's great to play kind of J3 sides, but over time, I think J1 teams, this is putting a kind of J1 hat on it, will come to say what's the difference between this and the Emperor's Cup, maybe. You know, maybe like, what's the difference between a J3 team and a JFL team or a university team? I worry that there's not really enough enthusiasm, or even, you know, I speak as someone who's lived in Japan for 10 years, and I think I've been to one or maybe two games that have not been on a weekend or a national holiday. I would love to go to cup games on a Wednesday night. I just can't get away from work. Even when I've worked like a 9 to 6, some of the bigger cities in Japan are just so big you can't get there for 7 o'clock for kickoff. So I really want this to be a success. I think this year will probably be quite good. Again, the proof will be in the pudding, kind of down the line. Does it just become a kind of nothing competition? Third division reserve team plays second division reserve team. That might be a slightly negative take. I want it to be successful, but I'm not convinced it will be. That's the kind of the long and short of it.
No, fair enough then. Yeah, it's I'm fascinated to see how it pans out. I appreciate those that mentioned the similarities to the Emperor's Cup, but anyway, we'll wait and see how it transpires this year. Looking forward to J1 teams getting involved this Wednesday night. So we then head in to the weekend and match day 9. We're beginning to gear up for Golden Week, which gets going the following weekend. But we have 9 games this weekend, with Yokohama F. Marinos given the weekend off in between their ACL semi-final first and second legs. Their home game that is scheduled that was scheduled against Kashiwa will be played in midweek at the end of May. So we have 7 games on Saturday. Johnny, what is your pick of the match day?
Johnny's pick of the match day.
Thank you.
I will go for the national derby between Urawa and Gamba. Mm-hmm. I think, in fairness, I think, maybe with Marinos kind of missing out, that we've been kind of blessed with some big fixtures in the previous kind of few match days. So there's not too many amazing fixtures that leap off the page. But I think, Urawa have looked very good at home, as we mentioned. They're coming off a kind of stinging defeat away from home. And Urawa Gamba is always a big occasion, even if one or both teams are not doing particularly well. So the fans will be out in force. And we'll see if Gamba have got a new bit of kind of metal behind them. And we'll also see, I think Urawa will surely be kind of bringing Brian Linson out of storage to get his usual goal against Gamba. So we'll see if he's in the lineup. I think hopefully be a close game, keenly contested. That'd be the one I would choose. I think also, like we kind of touched on with Lewis, I think that Kawasaki Verdy game is that's one one to keep an eye on. And maybe on the Sunday also, Grampus against Cerezo. I mean, I'm not sure it'd be the greatest spectacle, but Grampus, the way they are playing, you could almost see them being the team to upset Cerezo. That they wouldn't play, they'll have like 5 shots to Cerezo's 18 and make a 1-0 win. But I think very interesting, an interesting test of Cerezo's kind of top 3 potential title credentials, and another chance to see if Nagoya can kick on and keep this good run going. And but once again, Ben, you're FC Tokyo, they're involved in one of the most intriguing games of the match day. So hosting Machida Zelvia and another kind of inverted commas Tokyo derby. So how do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, it should be a really interesting occasion. And as we've said with Tom in part one, as supporters, we literally don't know which FC Tokyo team is going to turn up on any given match day. And Machida, well, they will be obviously still be missing Fujio and Hirakawa again, and Tokyo will be still be missing Matsuki and Araki. Yeah, I expect a really well-organized Machida side to come and, cause Tokyo problems, but also be efficient and effective at trying to stop Tokyo playing. So, yeah, it could be I think it could be another frustrating afternoon for Tokyo supporters, to be perfectly honest, but it'll be a really interesting game against an opponent that we, in inverted commas, as a Tokyo supporter, have never faced in league play before. So, yeah, a really interesting one in prospect there. I like your shout on Urawa Gamba, Johnny, and out of left field, I'll throw a Shonan Kobe at you. Shonan coming in on the back of that battling draw away at F Muddy Nose, and they haven't got the result I think some of their performances have deserved in the last few rounds. So maybe the visit of the defending champions will be their showpiece occasion to really kickstart their season. Obviously, I have a somewhat of a rooting interest in Shonan staying in J1, as they're the closest team to the city in which I live. So, I want to see them do well overall. And, I'm hoping they can put on a good performance and get a result against Kobe on Saturday. So, just in general, listeners, Hiroshima could go top of the live table if they win at Sapporo in one of three 2 p.m. kickoffs on Saturday. That's because, as Johnny has mentioned, leaders Cerezo don't play until Sunday when they visit Nagoya at 3 o'clock. That is the same time as FC Tokyo hosting Machida. So, an interesting looking round on paper of 9 games, as we said, with the one game held back due to F. Marinos's participation in the ACL, in which we wish them all the best. We wish Japan's under 23s all the best against China in their group stage opener. And we hope all 11 Levain Cup second round ties are entertaining on Wednesday night as well. All right, Johnny, we will leave it there then. So really interesting to chat with Lewis and Tom in part one. Great to get them on together to chat about the big occasion at Ajinomoto Stadium. So enjoy what's to come in the week ahead, and I'll catch up with you on next week's episode.
Thanks very much, Ben. Yeah, it was a peaceful occasion with Lewis and Tom. There's no fighting, so I think we can call it a successful episode. Yeah, and nine intriguing games, and plenty of other cups and things going on. So I'm looking forward to chatting to you again next week. Thanks.
All right then. So that's it for this episode of the J Talk podcast. Johnny and I would like to thank Lewis and Tom for their guesting roles in part one. We'd like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon, and we'd like to thank you listeners for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 match day 9. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk podcast.